Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, welcome to Dudes on Hockey Podcast. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
Dude, have you been watching this TV series that's on AMC? It's called The Walking Dead.
Walking Dead, no, I haven't heard.
This is my new favorite show. It's on Sunday nights at 10, dude. It's after Dexter, that other show that you really should get Showtime to watch.
Yeah.
It's quite a lovely evening, a Sunday night of horror.
Yes.
You've got Dexter, great show, and then it's followed by The Walking Dead. You don't know what it's about?
No, what network is that even on?
It's on AMC, dude. If you had been paying attention, the listeners know.
Oh, excuse me.
And you're not listening to me.
Okay.
Listen, dude.
I'm listening.
This is about The Walking Dead.
Yes.
Is a show, actually.
Zombies?
Yeah, well, close. It's about the New York Islanders. And what they do is they wander around Long Island looking for an arena that's never going to be built, and then they eat their coach.
I see. Yes, it's sort of, it's like Law and Order based on real life events.
Bum 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 bum. Garth Snow ate Scott Gordon this week.
Because
they fired him
because his best players got hurt, and somehow that's the coach's fault.
Yeah, the team totally overachieved last year, and now they go on a 10 game losing streak.
But that.
It's you know, it's like Scott Gordon was asked to make a wedding cake out of Taco Bell.
Yeah,
I mean, what are you supposed to do?
Taco Bell,
it's not very good. And we saw them on display firsthand this week at the tank. The Islanders, oddly enough, gave the Sharks quite a boring run for their money.
Dude, that game was boring.
Yeah, you called it maybe one of the worst experiences at the tank in recent memory.
Yeah, actually, I thought there were two real bummer games. The Ducks game on Tuesday last week was a real bummer. It couldn't hold a torch to the previous Ducks game, which was really exciting, full of fights and scoring. This one was like 2-1 Sharks overtime loss. And then they have a 2-1 overtime win against the Islanders, which, you know, being a Sharks fan and expecting this team to play well, seeing them play the number 14th ranked Eastern team to a tie through regulation and overtime isn't exactly confidence inspiring. So, yeah, Logan Couture puts in a nice goal, and then Dan Boyle puts in a nice goal to win it in overtime, win it in the shootout. You know, you take the 2 points, but you know, going into the weekend, I didn't have a real great feeling. You know, you have Calgary coming up. You have the Kings coming up on Monday. You know,
yeah, little did we know the offensive explosion that would happen.
Yeah.
In two really great, solid wins. Well, I don't want to say great. I don't think the win on Saturday was a great win because I don't think Calgary is a great team.
Mm-hmm.
But when you beat up on the LA Kings, which had kind of been world beaters on everybody, you know, best penalty kill in the league. They won, what, 6 in a row coming into the game. They're riding high. Willie Mitchell is hurt again. You know, everything's going as, you know.
according to plan.
And then they come in and drop a 6-3 result. I don't think the score totally reflects how close this game really was, but a really good win for the San Jose Sharks, who were playing without Douglas Murray last night.
That's right, and I thought there were two really important turning points in the Kings game, you know, clearly the most noteworthy of the games of the past week. One was that the Sharks, you know, don't start the scoring off. The Kings score first, and the Sharks looked pretty good in the first few shifts, and it was sort of one of those things where you go, wow, you know, these guys can really hold it to them. And then the Kings slowly came back. They dominated some good play in the first period, and then they scored, and you sort of think to yourself, uh-oh, you know, this could be a long night. This could be a real bummer. But then the Sharks score and tie it up, and even better than that, they score again with less than a minute left in the first period to take a 2-0 lead going into the first intermission. And so that was a real key point, you know, good for the Sharks that happened. And then I think the other one is the one that probably everybody will remember about that game if we talked about it a month from now, which is Ryan Smith scoring at one end, the goal not being called at the time, play continues. Eventually, Torrey Mitchell gets a breakaway on the other end and scores. And of course, as the rule states, since the first goal was good, everything after that point is erased from maybe not our memories, but certainly the NHL rulebook. So Torrey Mitchell's goal didn't count. So it went from a 4-1 lead is what it looked like to a 3-2 lead. It looked like a really bad break for the Sharks at the time. And yet they came back from that as well. The game was never tied. The Sharks continued to lead and even scored to go 4-2. So that was another point at which the Sharks could have been really sort of in trouble. That could have been a real momentum shift for the Kings, and they didn't let that happen, and they scored again. So two great, you know, really important turning points of that game, and the Sharks performed admirably in both cases.
Two things that really caught my eye in the third period were after the Kings made it 4-3, 40 seconds later,
right,
on the next shift, Joe Thornton and Marlow and Heatley were not going to be denied, and they willed their way to a goal 40 seconds later.
Yeah.
They just jumped all over them. It shows that when those three guys decide that they're going to turn it on,
mm-hmm.
they can't be stopped.
That's right.
And they bowled their way. I mean, how many goals were scored on rebounds in the center of the ice? I mean, and that's the kind of stuff that we've been asking for. You know, a lot of shots from the point, some good things happening. And there were some saves in the third period by Nitti Mackey
mm-hmm.
that were really impressive. Those big saves that we've been asking for. And even though he let in three goals, a very stellar performance by Nitti Mackey, the Sharks were outshot 35-34 in that game. A really good win, something that has to make you feel good.
Yeah, great win. All four lines scored in that game. Very noteworthy. Don't see that too often. And the first line was the last line to score.
Mm-hmm.
All the other three lines, the lower three lines, had scored before the Joe line. And when you see that happen, I mean, you just got to have a nice warm feeling, because if anybody's going to score and want to, you know, show that they can still, you know, bring the offense, it's certainly the top line. So it's great to see Nickel get a nice goal, which Fraser McLaren was a big part of. Just a beautiful pass from Klo to Pavelski for that goal. It was just, you know, just great offensive play all around, and they really sort of ground the Kings down. But got to give the Kings credit. There were a lot of scary moments that I thought could lead to goals throughout that game. I mean, the Kings are no joke.
Now, they're a dangerous team. They're definitely a dangerous team. Look, before we even know it, the Sharks have rattled off 9 points
their
last five games. They had 9 out of 10 on their homestand. Now they're on the road.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be going to Colorado and to Dallas.
That's right.
Is that right? And
uh-huh.
then they come home on Saturday for a much anticipated rematch of the European home and home series with the Columbus Blue Jackets, who had a little run going, and it looks like they've cooled off a little bit in the last couple
games. They have 18 points. The Sharks have 20. So it's not that they're not embarrassing.
Not a big disparity there. Dude, what has gone right for the Sharks in the last five games that they've been able to? I mean, the Anaheim loss, I think, was disappointing, especially since the game was so dull. And I would say the Islanders win wasn't anything to write home about. But they did rise up and beat two good teams in Tampa Bay and the Kings. What are we seeing different?
It's, you know, it's hard to say. To be honest with you, I think that they were looking for a lot of nice plays before, and certainly we saw against the Kings, a lot of that stuff was just garbage in front of the net. Danny Heatley's great at that. If the puck's anywhere close to his stick, you know, he's going to get on it and score. You know, we saw a lot of mad scrambles in front, and it seems like, you know, something we talked about in detail last week is we're not getting shots from the point through traffic. We're not getting that defense that is generating offense for the team. And one way you do that is you put the puck on the goalie and create a scrum in front of the net. And it seems like the last couple games, the Sharks have been able to do that. They've been able to find open pucks in front of the net, because in this league, if a goalie gets a good look at a first shot from the distance, you're not going to get a good rebound. And more likely than not, he's going to make the save and hold on to it. So you have to create traffic, and you have to create the opportunity for loose pucks in front of the net with a mad scramble. And the Sharks have done that the last couple games. They need to continue to do that, especially on the road. I mean, that's how you win on the road, right? Garbage goals, not tic-tac-toe passing and amazing shots. It's, you just got to grind it out. And the Sharks ground out some goals the last couple games, and it looks good.
Let me tell you what the main difference is here. And I think that you know this answer. And we had a listener who wrote in with a question.
Oh, yeah?
That also explains this answer, dude.
Yes.
Logan Couture had 6 points in these five games.
Yeah, okay.
That's no coincidence.
That's true.
Up until then, Devin Setoguchi had been playing in the top six. He had 2 points in like 10 games.
Yes.
And Couture gets those top 6 minutes, and he delivers, dude.
Mm-hmm.
6 points in five games. We could see this guy has the potential to be a point a game player. It wouldn't be, well, I mean, if he sticks on this pace, which might be a little bit unreasonable,
yeah.
But is 60 points unreasonable?
No, 60 points.
I don't
points
think so at all, you know,
amazing,
which is what you would expect from someone playing with Pavelski and Klo. How that line has come to life with him there, dude. We have a question here. I believe it is from our friend Tom in Mountain View, dude. What's it say?
Yeah, he says, I have to give you some props for calling out Seto on his bad play. It seems you
thank
were 100%
you
correct there, because moving him down from the second line and moving Couture up seems to have really energized that line in the team. Yeah, like you just said, that's a big difference. I realize it's only a few games in, Tom says, but Couture looks like a great playmaking second line center for Pavs and Klo. I hate to say it, but was it possible Seto was holding Pavs and Klo back a little bit? Well, I don't want to get into a crazy semantic argument here, but Seto is fighting it a little bit. He seems like he's creating scoring chances, but he just can't bury it. You know, because he was creating chances for himself, and it's not like he just became invisible. It seemed like every game, up till he scored finally in that one game, it seemed like he had one or two really dynamite chances, and that's really all you can ask for as a forward. If you have a great opportunity to put the puck in the net twice a game, then you're in pretty good shape. So I wouldn't say he's holding him back. It just seems like Couture is adding a slightly different flavor. Maybe it's the fact that Pavs is playing more like the wing position. Maybe that's it. You know, or having another sort of centerman on that line with those kinds of responsibilities and ability to make plays. I mean, Seto's not really a playmaker. He's more of a shooter. So
right. It's the versatility.
Yeah.
You know, you see Couture in these games has been able to, you know, deliver some assists. You know, he was only scoring goals before that, you know, and in these games here, he got, you know, four assists. Before that, he only had, you know, four goals. Mm-hmm, so he's really contributing in all areas. He's taking tons of shots. I mean, for a center, you know, he's taking seven shots against Anaheim, five against Tampa.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This kid is good. I mean,
he's really good.
And he should not get demoted.
No.
No matter what. They should stick with him. And was Seto holding them back? Well, apparently. I mean,
yeah.
Yes. And, you know, dude, it's still, we're waiting for Seto to kind of come back to being that player who delivered such high potential 2 years ago. Is this guy going to come back, dude? Or have we seen the best of Seto and now it is the second best.
Well, Tom asked the difficult question here. He says, given the new chemistry and line combos, do you still think Seto should be traded, or should he simply be relegated to the third line as his pay and performance probably dictate? I'm thinking that his value just isn't there any longer to warrant serious trade ideas. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that last statement, because if you just take, you know, a few games, and he had some injuries last season, you know, he certainly showed his potential, and even maybe more importantly, he's not getting paid a whole lot of money. And this is a guy that certainly has shown in the past he has a nose for the net. I mean, this isn't Jonathan Chichu, who's scoring 3 points and making $3.5 million. He's making, you know, under $2 million, and he's a very young player, so he has a lot more potential. I think Seto could still be a sought after piece in a trade. Should he be traded? For the right piece, the answer is yes.
Yes, not just to trade him.
Right.
You know, this is not a dump and run situation
right
here.
This isn't a Jeff Finger situation.
Right. You want to trade him if you can get something of extreme value, something
right
that the team needs, like another defenseman. You know?
Right.
And you know, we'll get to that topic again
here
in a little bit, but I don't think his value around the league is totally dirt.
No,
I think that he definitely has value for the price and for his age. And it would be interesting to see, you know, as an unrestricted free agent, where would he kind of fall? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Someone, you got to figure someone would give him something to give him a shot.
Oh, yeah.
To play, especially on maybe a younger team. But no, you don't want to just give him away. And he looked good in that LA game with Mitchell. They were fairly productive.
Yeah,
you know,
playing
together, and they had a lot of energy. They were making some things happen. You certainly don't want to give him away, but he isn't playing that key role that I think mm-hmm. people may have expected him to a month or two ago.
That's true. That's true. Okay, so got plenty of questions this week. Questions at Dudes on Hockey, of course, is the email address. Matt asks, can you make a page on your site for all of your sound effects? My Wednesdays are always better after I hear Crazy Trade.
Oh.
I don't know, man. I mean, isn't
you're gonna hold back?
Isn't that my intellectual property? I mean,
Crazy Trade belongs to you?
Well, me
somehow
and
I think Ozzy,
me and Ozzy
Osbourne might think better of that, dude.
Yeah,
dude, let's play a little Crazy Trade.
All right.
For Matt, just so he can get a taste.
Yeah, well, you can't
fire it up, dude. Don't hold back. Oh, don't be play hard to get.
Okay,
it's not that kind of podcast.
Crazy Trade.
Well, dude, I think this might segue into our next email where we have someone writing in and asking about some other defensive targets, some guys that we've talked about before, some guys that we haven't. Mm-hmm. There's an email from Neil, I believe someone we haven't heard before.
Neil says he's from Edmonton.
We have
an actual Edmontonian emailing us about hockey. Wow, it's like backwards day. It's
congrats like for thawing out your fingers in the winter and making them
it's
work like, magic on the keyboards. It's nice to have you around, Neil.
Yeah, Neil, great to have you. So Neil says, clearly we think that the Sharks need to add mobility to the back end. I have a couple of guys that I think Wilson should and probably is considering. Number one is Ed Jovanovski, mm-hmm. who we often
had a hat trick about a week ago.
Ed Jovanovski
did. He did.
We call him Jovocop. The other is Brent Burns, who is a...
I love Brent Burns.
Who is a defenseman for the Minnesota
Wild.
Works
magic. He sure knows how to spear a guy.
Yeah. Oh, that was the Bernier thing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he put Bernier in the hospital.
That's right. Oh, yeah, there was a weird sort of scrum that happened in the past week where he sort of brought his hand up and his stick was still in it, and he sort of like hammer-fisted Steve Bernier, but his stick was still in his hand, so it ended up breaking Steve Bernier's cheekbone. Oops.
Oops.
So anyway, so Jovo is certainly no spring chicken. He's sort of an aging defenseman. I think he's he's after 35 here at this point. Skates pretty well, tough as nails, bomb of a shot. That's Jovo. Brent Burns is a much younger guy, really big kid, good skater, also a good shot. So which one of these guys do you think the Sharks should target more, and maybe more importantly, which one do you think the Sharks could actually acquire reasonably?
If I could choose between the two, it'd be no question I would want Brent Burns, and I think that neither are available. I
right.
I thought Brent Burns potentially in the offseason could have been a good fit. We talked about this mm-hmm. with the Wild needing scoring and us needing defense. Now, the Wild have been really up and down, and they've gone on a streak, and then they've cooled off. They're 5-4-1 in their last 10.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of figuring it out under Todd Richards, but Brent Burns has been a big part of that and is off to a pretty good start, this year.
And it's not like they're swimming in great defensemen in Minnesota. I mean, if you had to...
They have some solid guys. They got Sidlicky, they got Zanin. But
Cam Barker.
They've got Cam Barker.
Yep.
But I don't think they're looking to move Brent Burns unless they can get... I was tossing Seto's name around there, but now that's probably not nearly enough.
They're going to want more.
Now with Phoenix, Jovo's not going to get that kind of money in the offseason again. You're going to figure he's probably going to take about half of that. He might not quite be in a Rob Blake situation, but he's going to get more like $4 million, mm-hmm. In the offseason. Will Phoenix keep him at that money? I don't know.
So would you want to make a trade to Phoenix to get 6 weeks of Jovocop?
Well, but we didn't have to give him anything.
Right. But I mean, that's the thing is that...
I don't think they're going to be looking to move him. I mean, he's...
See, I disagree. If Phoenix isn't in the hunt, and right now they seem to be pretty up and down as well.
Right.
I could see them wanting to get rid of a big salary like Jovanovski, if only for a few months. I mean,
right.
They're in some pretty dire financial straits down there. Why not get him off the
books?
It
would be surprising to see them deal him in division. That is a big salary for the Sharks to take on.
Right.
And they would have to take back some money from us, and I don't think they're going to be looking to do that. That's a pretty immovable contract, really.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you're willing to take something back. I have been threatening to put my top 10 list of trade targets up on the blog. So far, I have yet to deliver, but here are the guys that I'm looking at right now. I'm going to put this list up hopefully soon, dude. Yoni Pitkinen's at the top of my list.
Yeah.
Number two on my list right now is Francois Beauchemin. I just think the Maple Leafs are a great fit for the Sharks and a team that, why wouldn't they want Devin Setoguchi?
Yeah.
You know, what do they have to lose?
Mm-hmm.
You know, to be able to move a D-man. Thomas Cabrelet is on the list. You know, I think he definitely wants out. James Wisniewski, dude. Mm-hmm. What were your thoughts when you saw him on Thursday?
I like James Wisniewski. I mean, it wasn't exactly a scintillating, thrilling game, but James Wisniewski is, I think, pretty definitely the best defenseman they have left. And I say left because their best defenseman, Mark Streit, is out with injury. So James Wisniewski is their number two right now, and he is playing number one minutes because he's their best, and he didn't look overmatched against anyone, really, and I wasn't super impressed with his offensive ability in that game, but then again, I wasn't super impressed with anybody's offensive ability in that game, so
right.
That's not really a fair comparison, but you know, he's got, as some listeners have said, he's got a little bit of mean in him. I like that, and I thought it was a great trade for Anaheim when they picked him up. I'm still on the bandwagon for James Wisniewski. My only contention point is this guy actually a number two? Because I think we've said to we're blue in the face that that's what we think the Sharks need is a number two. Or do we? I don't want to get another number three or number four defenseman and pretend he's a number two. That's not what I want.
Right.
That's the one thing I'm a little concerned about with Wisniewski that I don't have about Pitkinen, for instance. I mean, Pitkinen is a number two defenseman behind Boyle.
Right.
Without question, would be a number one on a lot of teams.
How about Dennis Weidman?
You're preaching to the choir on Weidman.
Weidman's off to a good start. He actually leads the tied for the lead for the Florida Panthers in scoring. I mean, talk about a team that's headed nowhere.
Well, yeah.
I mean, they might be willing to part with that salary. Another team that they are so starved for offense. Why wouldn't they be interested in Devin Setoguchi?
Right,
you
right.
Know, if you could do a Weidman for Setoguchi, gosh, you'd have to think about it. That Brian McCabe is off to one of the best starts of your career.
Mm-hmm.
10 points, a plus eight. You don't see that from McCabe very often.
Well, McCabe had 70 points 1 year, I remember, with
Toronto.
Right,
but I'm talking about the plus eight.
Yeah,
I mean, he's playing on a team that has 14 points.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
That's
amazing. He's doing something right.
Mm-hmm.
Ian White.
Yeah, Ian White.
We liked Ian Light
a
lot when we saw them play on Saturday. That guy will shoot the puck always.
Yes.
And he had a great shot pass that actually, I think, led to one of the goals.
I think that's right.
So Ian White is definitely a player of interest. Here are some other names that may be a little bit off the radar near the bottom of my list. Ryan Whitney.
Yeah.
Of the Edmonton Oilers. He doesn't like the Sharks very much, but maybe he might be bored with being up there.
Yeah.
That's kind of a big salary, maybe not exactly who you're looking to add, but a legitimate 2-3 defenseman, and we've talked about having him as part of this team before. Curtis Foster is really more of a specialist, maybe a little bit too one-dimensional. And how about a guy who's having a bit of a career resurgence in Buffalo and Steve Montador? Any interest?
Steve Montador is not the number two. You know, is he might be better than Huskins, but again, I don't want like this gigantic pool of defensemen in the number three and number four spot. I don't think that's really going to help the Sharks any.
Now, let me talk. Play the crazy trade, dude.
We got to play it again?
Let's play it again.
All right, dude.
Play it again. Because it's worth it. I'm going off the rails on a crazy trade. Dude.
Yes.
Guess who's complaining about not having a contract extension?
Who?
Shea Weber.
Oh, don't tease me.
I'm just saying, dude. I'm throwing it out here right now on the air.
Dude.
Shea Weber would cost a lot.
Oh, my God. I can't even imagine what he would cost.
All right. Let me just put it on the table, dude. I'm putting it all on the table. Would you? Would you?
Mm. Yes. Let me think about that. Yes. Oh, wait. You haven't put out the deal yet. Yeah.
I think Shea Weber would cost us Joe Pavelski. Would you do it?
Oh, they'd want more than him.
Really, dude? A signed Joe Pavelski?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, I don't see now. There's no way I'd give more than that. That's a huge, huge price to pay. You're giving them an Olympian who signed for 3 years, who could score 60 points and instantly be their best offensive player. Instantly.
Set me straight, listeners. I think they're going to want more than that. They're going to want more than Joe Pavelski.
Ooh, this is the new poll question.
Yeah.
Is Joe Pavelski, would you do it, first of all?
Yeah.
I mean, so it sounds like you would do it. Now, remember, Shea Weber, he has no contract.
But he's RFA, right?
Ooh.
If he's restricted, that makes a huge difference. If he's unrestricted, then that's... Then sort of all bets are off.
I think he's unrestricted, but I'm going to have to take a little look here. I'm going to take a little peeky peek.
All right, take a little peek. But, he is sort of the ultimate franchise player, franchise defenseman, right? Who are the young defensemen in his class at this point?
RFA, dude. Yeah. RFA.
Okay, so let's name some, just to give the listeners a little context here. Who are the young defensemen in his class? I can't think of...
Drew Doughty.
Drew Doughty is the number one guy.
Tyler Myers?
Yeah, I know. That's the second name. He's not doing so hot this year, but, only 1 year. Duncan Keith, yes. Okay, Duncan Keith.
So, those are the names that kind of come to my mind right away.
Right. So, we're talking elite.
He's an elite defenseman.
Absolutely.
There's no doubt
elite.
About it.
And, this is a guy who, he's one of the few defensemen that you would say maybe Boyle's now the number two. You know what I mean? I mean, this is how far we're going with Shea Weber. Talk about a rocket of a shot, by the way. And they're going to want more than Joe Pavelski.
I hate to tease you like that, too, but I just want to put it out there that he's talking about it.
Yeah.
He's talking about how he doesn't have an extension. And, is he going to want to do one of these Jeff Carter lifer contracts where, maybe you're making $5 million over 11 years?
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you really want to be in Nashville in 11 years when probably they'll be playing in Kansas City and then they will have moved to Winnipeg? Like, who knows where they'll be?
Right. They could be
There's no guarantee that
Nashville...
They could
be Nashville, in Tucson or something.
Who knows where they're going to be, dude?
Yeah.
I don't know. This could be Shea Weber's way of getting out.
Well, if he wants a big, long contract, he probably can't come to the Sharks, right? Because it seems like the Sharks, Doug Wilson's not real into the 10-year, $50 million deal here.
That's true.
Yeah.
But that's
tantalizing, isn't it?
I know. It's a pipe dream, dude. But that's why we got Crazy Trade.
We got some more emails.
Okay.
Patrick needs an update on the poll question. Let me go to the website here. Basic moment, just in time.
Well, first, let's update the listeners, and we should let them know that the drunks have not returned.
That's true.
So this ended up being a one-time deal. So luckily... We're not having to deal with them on a nightly basis, but the listeners have weighed in and the results are in, dude. And the winner is
the drunks by a fairly slim margin.
Who would you rather sit next to? 55% of the listeners say they'd rather sit next to the drunks. Dude, did you ever come to a consensus for yourself?
Well, there's a lot of different variables here. Well, let's go to Patrick here, because Patrick needs an update. He personally voted for sitting next to the drunks as opposed to Stemmer and Junior Stemmer on the grounds that they were probably all charged up and excited for that first game, but there's no way they'll sustain that on a consistent basis. The Stemmers, on the other hand, sound like an all-game, every-game annoyance. Patrick, you could not be more right about this. That is exactly what's happened. Those people... specifically haven't returned, but I'm with you. I think I would have to go with the drunks because there's just no way they're going to be able to do that every game. If it was an every game thing, I'm going with Stemmer and Junior Stemmer because the drunks were horribly obnoxious, like really obnoxious. At least like Stemmer and Junior Stemmer when he says like, Nabby, get back in your net, like every time Nabby comes out to play the puck, which really started getting on my nerves. At least you can sort of block that out after a time, but like, two people just like hollering, yelling like anti-Canadian
trying to fight
people. So lame.
I'd pick the Stemmer, Junior Stemmer, dude. I think I would, even though it drove us to change seats 2 years in a row. I think if the drunks were our every night season ticket holders, I would actually have to reconsider going to some games. Like it would be
bad,
It would be.
Well,
now let me put it this way, dude.
Okay.
What would you... Now, you've got the choice of Stemmer, Junior Stemmer, or the drunk Red Wings fans that sat in front of us last year.
Oh, that was tough, huh?
They wanted to fight us, too.
See, I'd definitely take Stemmer and Junior Stemmer over those guys.
Absolutely.
Those guys were, even though they weren't as loud, they were more obnoxious.
True that, dude.
All right. The other thing I wanted to sort of... One thing that we sort of ran into over the weekend is we were considering giving some games away. We thought we might have gotten another hookup for a ticket. That actually fell through. But actually at the same time that very day, I don't know how...
it's a miracle.
It is a miracle, but someone named Blake contacted us, who is an avid Sharks fan and DOH listener, but Blake, I couldn't get a gender on Blake. What are we guessing with Blake? Are we going with she?
I think I'm going she.
Okay.
She, because I believe she refers to her husband.
Oh, is that right?
I believe so.
Well, you know, this is California.
That's true.
Okay, so anyway, we'll go with she for now. Blake, please correct us if we're wrong. But Blake is a ticket coordinator for the Child Advocates of Silicon Valley, which is a nonprofit organization that currently supervises 462 advocate volunteers working with 573 children who are removed from their homes due to abuse, neglect, or abandonment and placed into foster care. Now, needless to say, that's a pretty rough situation for any kid. And cadvocates.org is the website, and tickets@cadvocates.org is the email address. If you want to donate tickets, just email Blake at that email address and you can write them off. You know, these are tax deductible donations. And so in the future, certainly if we have trouble getting rid of our tickets, I'm probably going to be donating them to Blake. I think, you know, get a couple kids to a Sharks game, man, you know?
Absolutely.
Get some new fans out there. Get some fresh blood.
Totally.
So people do that. It's good. It's good times. It's a good cause. And I encourage you to do so. I know money's tight, but, you know, you can write some money off your taxes. You know, it helps out too.
Sure. Thanks, Blake, for getting in touch, and thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks, Blake. I think that does this for the emails, although Tom did have a PS in his initial email.
What is that?
Saying, I'd love to hear any thoughts regarding the controversy surrounding the Colin Campbell emails. So that's a particular NHL news piece that...
Can you fill in the listeners for those who don't know what Tom is referring to?
So I guess a ref got fired 3 years ago. Some guy named Warren, I think that's his first name or last name. So let me pull open the thing here. Dean Warren is this official's name. He was terminated, and there was a hearing because the union, you know, there's an officials union. So during the course of these proceedings, a number of emails that Colin Campbell had sent out to various refs, including Stephen Walcom, who was at the time the director of officiating, and all there were players' names in these emails, but they were all redacted at the time. So, but this blogger, Tyler Dello, who writes for MC79 Hockey, which is a blog that I read, I guess he did a little investigative work, for which I say bravo to you, sir, that, you know, TSN and all these other sort of mainstream media outlets didn't, you know, put the dots together. And he figured out, like, who some of these players were. And it turns out that Colin Campbell was complaining about calls that went against his son, who played for the Florida Panthers at the time. Oops. And he also called a certain player a dirty diver or something like that, or a little faker, I think was the term. A little faker.
Who is the player?
Mark Savard. That has particular significance because there was that big hit by Matt Cook on Mark Savard last year that put Savard out with a bad concussion, and Cook got no suspension. So that puts that particular incident in a whole new light now.
Oh, boy. I didn't even think about that.
So now everyone's like, if Colin Campbell's metering out justice and he's sending emails saying Mark Savard is a dirty little faker, Matt Cook rings him up from the blind side and he gets nothing. Now everybody's trying to put two and two together in here and say, wait a second, you know, we saw the crazy wheel of justice, you know, go against Joe Thornton here a week or two ago, and it didn't go against Matt Cook. You know, this just sort of makes the NHL look really bad again.
How did that email go, do you think, like when Colin Campbell was trying to figure out, you know, what to do about Joe Thornton? He's, you know, writing to Doug Wilson, hey, Doug, saw the Joe Thornton hit, LOL.
Yeah, lols.
Too bad it didn't go against Mark Savard, that little faker. BYOB, by the way, to my party, my house party. I'm having a disciplinary row. Joe's getting two games.
Yeah.
TTYL.
Nice, dude.
Colon.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think it... Never mind.
It makes the NHL look even dumber. Yeah, I mean, the discipline thing, you know, we've gone off on a rant on that, you know, in the past week, so I'm not going to rehash it now, but... The fact is that no one can predict what the NHL is going to do, and that hurts the game and it hurts the players, and it makes the players not know what to do in game situations, and that's not good for anybody. So,
why isn't Colin Campbell being asked to step down, dude?
Well, the NHL has circled the wagons, and they are full on backing Colin Campbell in this regard. They're saying this is not, it's not showing any bias on his part. Which is obviously arguable. And
do you think they're just putting on a good face right now, and in the next 3 months, Colin Campbell will resign?
Maybe they'll get Garth Snow.
Ooh, very possible.
No.
He obviously is a very patient and understanding man.
That's right. So
he loves to deflect blame.
I mean, the way this is going to go is that nothing's going to come of this. I think it's pretty obvious at this point. I mean, if the NHL was going to do something, they wouldn't have come out in support of Campbell in this regard. The player that really got screwed in this deal is his son, Greg Campbell, because now he's never going to get a fair shake. It's like he's either going to be the guy that his daddy calls up the refs and tells him not to make calls on him, you know. He's going to get it from both sides. And even if he does get a call, then players are going to give him crap for that. So they're going to say, wow, that must have been really bad if you got called for that kind of thing. So Greg Campbell is a legitimate NHL player, and this guy's really sort of getting the brunt of this attack, to be honest. I mean, he's got the wrong last name, and he didn't really do anything wrong.
Thanks, Daddy.
Yeah, thanks, Dad. Happy Father's Day.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
what a crazy turn of events.
I know.
Outstanding. Thank you so much, Colin Campbell, for the laughs.
Dude, in other good news, Carey Price blanks the Flyer, so that's good for our fantasy team.
It is. Yeah, our fantasy teams, three of our four teams are doing very well.
Yes, we have one fantasy team
that is not and doing oddly well. Enough, like, I would have picked that team to be the best one.
Yeah.
Like, when you look at the guys that we have. So we're going to shake it up. We're over business. We're going to look to make some trades.
Greg Campbell, fantasy league pickup.
We're going to trade Malkin for Greg Campbell. And
yes,
the laptop the emails were written on.
Ooh, sweet. And yeah. Justin Bieber. Who, there's a picture of Justin Bieber on Puck Daddy with a Philadelphia Flyers jersey and Scott Hartnell. Man, and Kimo Thiemann.
Those guys doing?
This is a really incriminating picture. Wow.
I have to put the link on the blog, dude. Dude, instead of just surfing the web, should we wrap this up?
Yeah, we probably should. You know, it's been a great week for the Sharks, and I hope they can continue. Obviously, their last troubles were on the road when they played Minnesota and St. Louis, so let's hope against Colorado and Dallas.
I'm really looking forward to the matchup against Dallas,
yes,
actually, because I want to see Dallas cooled off a little bit lately, but I think that they have proven to be a better team than we thought, so it'll be interesting to see them in person.
And then the boys will be back home against Columbus, and we'll be talking about that next week. Make sure to tune in and catch us again here at Dudes on Hockey.
See you later.
Think the show sucks? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.